Welcome to AMI Sites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. With your host, AMI Kassar. AMI is the founder and CEO of Multifunding, an advisory company that helps you grow and stay in control of your business.
Hello and welcome. My name is AMI Kassar, founder and CEO of Multifunding. Joining us today is my friend Eric Schoenberg. Eric is editor-in-chief of Amplified Publishing Group and former CEO and editor-in-chief of Inc. and Fast Company. Our main topics today will focus on Eric's work in media integrity, what his goals are, and how it's going. Welcome, Eric.
Hey, AMI. Great to be here.
Eric, a lot has changed in your life in the last couple of years. Let's not focus so much on the past. Let's focus on the present. What are you up to these days besides flying around in those cool airplanes?
That is a great hobby and pastime, and I'm glad I finally did it, fulfilling a boyhood dream, learning to fly just 2.5 years ago. God, what am I up to? I'll tell you, I'll build up to it. The Amplified Publishing Group is a wonderful organization known as a hybrid book publisher. So if you think of a traditional publisher as being one in which the publishing company does everything for you as an author, and self-publishing in a situation where you do everything on your own behalf as the author, hybrid stands between the two. I like to think of it as concierge book publishing. The opportunity for hybrid book publishers had been created by the kind of broken state of traditional book publishing, in which book publishers are no longer able to fulfill that model of being the impresario for your book. Many authors are disappointed to find out that there is very little editing, there is very little or no marketing on your behalf, and that the traditional book publisher still exerts an awful lot of control and keeps most of the money. In a hybrid, all of that is reversed. You are the client as the author, and the financial situation is reversed. You keep most of the money and pay only a sliver to the organization that is your publisher. In this case, in my case anyway, it's Amplify. So that is one thing. It's really exciting to be part of making it easier for people with ideas to put into book form, realize that dream. So that has been an interesting part of my life. I guess you could say that since Inc. and Fast Company, I have been putting together a portfolio career. Another thing that is very close to my heart is a not-for-profit that I am now in a startup phase with. It's called the Newsroom Trust Project. It's a boot camp for working journalists to help them engage with what I believe is the most pressing problem for professional journalism, which is the declining state of trust in the profession. So my goal is to take working journalists away from the newsroom, get them to gather together and be exposed to the best thinking about how to earn the trust of their audiences, for leaders to earn the trust of their newsrooms, and to find business models that are sustainable and excite trust rather than suspicion in the audience. So that is the Newsroom Trust Project. I'm in the beginning phase, but have raised a significant seed round for it. And I'm very optimistic about where that is going to take me. And then, AMI, one more thing that is just kind of came out of the blue is I'm an expert witness in a lawsuit about magazine publishing. This is a really interesting look into the underbelly of the legal profession. And that has been interesting, quite a time consuming because deadlines are real, but it is all part of life's rich tapestry.
Legal claims, expert lawsuit, media integrity.
Yeah.
Might not have been what you thought was going to be happening 5 years ago, was it?
No, that is true. One of the curveballs that life can throw you.
So let's dig into the pieces. Are there some books that you're working in or involved in or helping in that you're particularly excited about, or are you not allowed to talk about them yet?
No, I'd be happy to talk about them. The books that are most interesting to me right now are books that carry the imprint of 100 Coaches, which is an organization that I've been a member of for a while. And it's a organization for executives and also executive coaches, hence the name. And many of those authors who are members of 100 Coaches use books as a way to, you know, claim their intellectual property, to talk about their technique for coaching, to help clients understand their processes, and actually use the book in many cases as a kind of textbook for executive coaching engagements. And so we're helping those leaders in the coaching industry explain, you know, how they help bring along executives and make them more successful and help them have more satisfying careers. So that's really good. So the imprint is 100 Coaches. It's in the background. Amplify is in the background, but we're the publishing company that makes that 100 Coaches possible. Another imprint that Amplify has is with the publishing company, Real Clear Politics. And there Amplify is helping writers in the political field and policy field get their ideas published. So those are the kind of range of books that I'm interested in. The Amplify's focus is on business leaders, helping them turn their experiences into high quality books and helping authors get their intellectual property out into the world.
Coaches, Martha Goldsmith's organization, are those coaches mostly working on C-suite executives? Are they working with entrepreneurs or CEOs or a combination of both?
A combination of both. The organization includes the great executive coach, Alyssa Cohn, who's noted as the number one startup coach in the world, as well as Marshall Goldsmith and Mark Thompson, who are famous for coaching companies that are among the Fortune 100, and as well as some of the most popular Silicon Valley startups.
Got it. Are you spending a lot of time in that community?
I come in where it's necessary. I'm on the board, but also carry the title of editor-in-chief. And, I like to roll up my sleeves and edit. That's how I spent most of my career. So when it can be helpful for me to help a writer or author conceive the book that they want to produce, or when it's time for me to weigh in on a manuscript to help move things along, that's what I like to do. I would say it's episodic rather than a lot of time on a consistent basis.
Love it. Sounds like fun and interesting work.
Thank you. It is.
Now, let's flip to the tougher one. Media integrity is a huge issue.
Yes, it is.
Almost leading to our divided country in some ways. So I know it's like we've talked about it before after you left, and it's sort of like an open canvas for you. So where do you start, and how have you made the choices about where to start in that work?
Well, thank you for that question. I mean, that was exactly the challenge that I had to face after Inc. and Fast Company. Is this problem is sprawling. And the question of where can I be most effective was the one that occupied me for most of the past year. Where I landed was a focus on media. So there are many prongs of the polarization and misinformation crisis that our democracy faces, social media and, psychology and, questions of cognition and things like that, technology, where I'm glad that there are a lot of people working on those angles on it, but that's not where I have the most credibility. Media is where I spent my career. So that's where I put my focus. And one thing that struck me was that in talking to other journalists, the question has really been in their minds, how do we get audiences to understand our processes and how we work very hard to get at the truth and all the checks and balances that are built into our, you know, professional standards and the leadership of our newsroom, but very little on what we in the profession can do to mitigate the impression that people have is that of our being not worthy of trust like we once were. And I think that, you know, it's one thing to say, well, we just need to educate people better and they will come around and understand how great we are. And another thing to focus on what it is that we can do to control how we're seen out in the world and how we can deliver information that is worthy of people's trust. And journalists, like everybody else, have blinders. They come to their profession with their own prejudices, and it may be hard from within to see how you're seen from the outside. So that's kind of what I want to focus on. And of course, underlying a lot of this that is part of and also coincident with the crisis in misinformation are the business models that are failing to make journalism with in the kind of volume and quality that it once enjoyed, sustainable. So I'd like to talk to newsroom leaders about how we can make media a successful going concern, and whether that means not-for-profit organizations like ProPublica or the Texas Tribune or many others that are springing up around the country, or whether it is a multi-pronged for-profit approach like we practiced at Inc. and Fast Company, and which eventually led us to profitability there.
Eric, is it hard? It's a fascinating topic to me because I don't understand all that much about it, but is there inherent tension between the, call it the separation of church and state, and what happens in the newsroom versus what the business office dictates to the newsroom?
Yes, and that has been part of the sort of media landscape as long as I can remember. It's not a recent development, but it is intensified by the information ecosystem, in part because there are now so many challengers. The internet, which allowed basically anybody to become a publisher, dramatically, exponentially increased the amount of content available for someone who's scrolling through their phone. And it also kind of eroded the distinction between professional institutional journalism and shoestring operations and just, you know, social media posts from your crazy uncle. And I think that, it's understandable in that circumstance why trust has eroded. And it means that journalists need to work harder than they did before to make clear that they practice standards of integrity, that they follow the highest standards of the industry, and to distinguish themselves from those other, shall we say, less conscientious sources of information.
I'm not going to ask you to comment on it because it's a space that you come from. I can just make an observation that you can agree with me or disagree with me about, but in the small business and entrepreneurship space, I see a lot of scrappy startups starting on, I think it's called Substack. I don't know what it is, that platform. And with all respect to everyone involved, oftentimes when I'm looking for information now, that's where I'm going. Because I find it to be, because of their size and perhaps their simplicity and their lack of overhead, they seem to not have the pressures and the distractions of the bigger organizations and the overhead pressures of the bigger organizations. Now, I know how to curate that as a reader, and others might not. And I understand the space of space, and if it was looking for that information in the space I didn't understand, I would have no idea. But it is interesting to me that sometimes I'm finding what, in my opinion, in the spaces I care about, the better and more useful information to be coming from the smaller publications.
That is a really good observation. And I've also subscribed to a number of Substacks that, you know, and to me, that's all just part of a spectrum of different kinds of professional journalism. It's hard to know from a Substack whether until you really are deep into it and you kind of understand the quality of the work, but it's hard to tell in advance what kind of standards the journalist adheres to, who's behind the Substack. And then there are questions about as that as a business model or that as a source of your information stream is, you know, the subscription fatigue, because you have to subscribe to each individual Substack rather than, you know, a newsroom that is essentially a bundle of a bunch of journalists working together. Also, you have to compensate for the fact that a Substack may not have the kind of resources that a longstanding newsroom has to put behind investigative stories and reach and that kind of thing. But a Substack does have the advantage of, you know, a personality that you can identify with, and that builds trust. That's one thing to think about as we, in the Newsroom Trust Project, analyze what are the indicators of trust. And they can be very niche. So the business model, as you noted, for a Substack subscription allows for a subscription-driven Substack, I guess I should say, is very low. So you can operate with a small subscriber base and still make a living. And you can really focus that on things that that matter most to a dedicated niche audience. And if you're a member of that audience, it can be a great thing to have a Substack writer who seems to write specifically for you.
Yeah, interesting. I know this world, you know this world much more broadly than I do it. I know it from a little microcosm of the things that I'm interested in. But it's really, and I think I've thought about this maybe more as you and I have had discussions on this topic over the last couple of years, but it's interesting that sometimes I think as media companies get bigger and they have more overhead pressure on them and more traffic pressure on them and more clicks pressure on them, it's harder and harder to not get compromised, harder and harder not to make choices to keep your overhead going than it is if you're smaller and more nimble. And that might be true with any company as it gets bigger, but I think presents unique challenges to media.
That is really useful data for me and my new endeavor, Ami. I do believe that business models do play into people's perception of the trustworthiness of sites. You know, the counter argument to that would be that, you know, a big institutional publisher may have resources that the audience recognizes and believes that they can do things that others can't do. And, you know, I just to pull an example from recent history from the New York Times, which everybody knows and everyone loves to either love or hate. The Times did a story about an atrocity in Ukraine. You may remember this story about the town of Bucha, where there were many people killed under Russian occupation. And the Times story not only covered that crime in detail, but identified the perpetrators individually, down to their names and their photographs and the unit in the Russian army that they came from. It was a remarkable piece of investigative journalism. It probably did not get the most clicks of any story in the Times during that month. And yet it was an indication of what, you know, a major media company that takes its Fourth Estate role seriously can actually do when it has the resources. A lot of, you know, we've been talking kind of at the barbell ends of the media industry. So I brought up the New York Times, which is incredibly well-resourced and gets a lot of revenue from subscriptions and is able to get a lot of traffic at things like product reviews and, you know, cooking stories to support the public interest journalism. Then at the other end, you brought up Substack, which is often in a sort of stereotype version, one person with a particular area of expertise or a fascination with a particular area who writes for a niche audience and is able to make a good living. Where I worry about are the vast majority of companies that are in the middle, neither as well-resourced as the New York Times or as niche as a profitable Substack. And these are the sources of information in, you know, cities in Ohio and Iowa and Oklahoma and Nevada that are the sources of information in those communities that let people know what's going on with their city government, that hold municipal politicians to account. And they are really hurting. They don't have the business model and the wealth that you get from being a national name like the New York Times, and they don't have the low overhead and faithful niche audience that you have on Substack. There, I would love to see a solution. There's a lot of data that suggests that the hollowing out of that middle tier of local news organizations has contributed to polarization, because people end up then getting their news from, you know, national sources that are doing some of the things that you described before of polarizing their audience, of catering to the worst in our tribal nature. And so local news becomes just part of the soup of polarized national news. And also, there's research that shows when you don't have people paying attention to what goes on in City Hall and what goes on in the state houses, that politicians end up knowing that they're not being watched, and they misbehave in ways that they sometimes admit they wouldn't do if they had a robust local press.
It's interesting. I was watching the State of the Union address the other night, and I know a lot about what the president said about the access to capital for small businesses, and he commended the vice president for maybe enough to be dangerous about it. And whatever was said completely doesn't represent the full story. And it made me wonder about everything else that was said that night from both sides and the bantering back and forth. And that being the model for kind of, and a lot of the journalism that follows that. So it was just interesting for me to say, you just told a quarter of the story, friend, and that's not cool either. So you got the headline you wanted out of the speech. And then how are journalists supposed to dig deep into every piece of that and really understand it without any bias is quite a daunting task.
It should be well within the power of a robust Fourth Estate to be able to do that. I've seen many stories about called fact-checking the State of the Union address. They focused a lot on the Social Security hubbub that triggered all that backtalk from the Republicans in the chamber, and not so much on small business. But there are focused small business publications. You and I know one very well called Inc. that should be fact-checking the president about small business. And, you know, I would say that politicians are going to always shade the truth in favor of making their record look better or making the other person's record look worse. That's why we need a robust, independent press to be a check on power and disinformation.
Because I think a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are entrepreneurs. Is there anything that entrepreneurs can do to help you in this mission of yours or this cause of yours? If you, someone listened to this and said, that sounds amazing, I want to help, what might people be able to do?
Well, thank you. As an aside, before I address that question correctly, I have to say that in 10 years of covering entrepreneurs at Inc. left me with admiration for anyone who takes on the responsibility of making payroll and bringing an idea to fruition and aligning a team of workers behind a vision. And now I find myself, after writing about it for 10 years, in that position now with my not-for-profit startup, the Newsroom Trust Project. It is hard. It is confronting. And all the things that I and my writers wrote about, of that sense of discomfort, of always second-guessing yourself, are you doing the right thing, of sort of lacking the kind of guidance and ability to shuffle off responsibility on a superior that you have when you're an employee, is now my lot, as it is the lot of every entrepreneur. In the field of misinformation and media integrity, there are some for-profit startups. One of them is a company called NewsGuard that was founded by Stephen Brill, the entrepreneur behind a legal line of publications, and Gordon Krovitz from the Wall Street Journal. They rate websites, news websites, according to a collection of standards and, you know, news, and give credentials that people can use to rely on whether a site is reliable or not. In the technology field, there are a number of entrepreneurs who are looking for ways to use artificial intelligence to help the social media platforms, among other things, do content moderation and identify misinformation before it gets started. So entrepreneurship, I believe, is part of the multi-pronged approach that will eventually lead us out of this, kind of dark period in which misinformation and falsehoods are ascendant. Also, there are a number, I should also add, there are a number of entrepreneurs who are starting up their own social media platforms that would be optimized not to create polarization like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube are, but optimized to bring people together. And I applaud all those efforts. Entrepreneurship is hard enough. Entrepreneurship in this field is really, really difficult. Most of the work that's being done in the field, in research, in training, which is the category I would put the Newsroom Trust Project into, are not-for-profit companies. And there, every not-for-profit company is desperate for funding. And there have been a number of entrepreneurs like Craig Newmark from Craigslist who have been really, really important in putting money behind these projects. Laureen Powell Jobs, Steve Jobs' widow, has been a big supporter as well.
Interesting. Eric, if our listeners want to follow you along on this journey or learn more about it, are you hanging out anywhere on social media or a website talking about what you're up to?
I have a podcast called In Reality, and that is a podcast that attempts to elevate those people who are on the front line of the fight against misinformation. So please subscribe to In Reality. You can find it on Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcast. Yeah, it's helpful to look at In-Reality for the name.
It's fascinating as to watch you as you emerge into the next step on your journey. Only wish you the best of luck and Godspeed.
Well, Ami, let me reflect that right back at you. I had always admired you when I was the editor of Inc. And the CEO of Inc. and Fast Company. I think the work you do at helping entrepreneurs find the capital they need to realize their dream and keeping them out of the hands of people who would exploit their need for capital is really admirable. And I've watched you for years and applaud the work you do.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us today on AmiSites with your host, Ami Kassar, the foremost SBA thought leader. Make sure you visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.